While we were marching through Georgia, everybody swing your honey, swing your high and low. The Alaman left for the old left, and around the ring you go. A grand old right to left, walk on your heel and toe. Promenade that pretty gal to Georgia.
I want to thank you for listening to Moving Through Georgia. And as you know, this is a podcast about Georgia history, mostly focusing on Northeast Georgia. However, I have been doing a lot of reading recently about the origins of some of the issues coming up in American politics today. On Thursday, I posted an extra episode about the exclusionary clause of the 14th Amendment and the first time that particular clause was used to keep former Confederates from taking their seats in Congress. Today, we're going to take a look at the issue of impeachment, and specifically the first impeachment of a United States president. So, this is Moving Through Georgia, and today, the impeachment of Andrew Johnson. There are two issues at the heart of the conflict between Andrew Johnson and Congress. The first is how each side views the returning Confederate states. Johnson believed, as the Supreme Court would state later, that the Confederacy was made of states that had been hijacked by rebellious elements, and now that the war had eradicated those elements, they were ready to establish new state constitutions and go back to the business of being part of the United States. The majority in Congress saw the South as a rebellious, breakaway, wannabe nation, and with the end of the war, those states were basically territories. Territories that needed to be brought in line through the military under the direct rule of Congress. The second conflict was voting rights for blacks. Johnson was adamantly against the federal government proclaiming that former slaves would have the vote, and instead insisted that it be determined state by state. The Congress felt that that sort of talk was what got us into the whole mess to begin with, and it was time for the U.S. to take a stand and establish universal suffrage. Well, as universal as they considered it at the time. They aspired for both black and white men to vote, not women. In the first Congress after the war, a civil rights bill was passed that would grant citizenship and the right to vote to anyone, white or black, who had been born in the United States. Johnson vetoed it, and that veto was overridden by Congress, and you might want to get used to that because it's going to happen often. Realizing that they did not have a supporter for voting rights in the White House, the majority in Congress began work on the 14th Amendment to do what Johnson wouldn't. This would do nothing to bring both sides together. So in 1867, Johnson is facing a Congress that opposes him on just about everything. One of Congress's most significant allies was Edwin Stanton, Secretary of War. Johnson had pretty much retained Lincoln's cabinet, so firing Stanton would have been seen not as a reflection on his work as secretary, but instead as a purely political and somewhat petty move. To keep their man in the cabinet, Congress passed the Tenure of Office Act. This states that a candidate for office that requires congressional approval to be hired also needs congressional approval to be removed. This is important. Congress will also pass the first of a series of Reconstruction bills that would place five generals in charge of military districts in the South, again, treating those former states as territories. They expect states to pass the 14th Amendment and extend the vote to black men in order to become fully fledged members of the United States, and Johnson disagrees. At one point, he even argues that he knows of no black men who were even asking for the vote. He vetoes, Congress overrides, and both laws go into effect. When Congress is out of session, Johnson decides he's had enough. It's time to dispose of a major roadblock, so he demands Stanton's resignation. Stanton refuses, so Johnson does the next best thing and suspends Stanton. Stanton is replaced with Ulysses Grant, and in December of 1867, the Articles of Impeachment come out. Not everybody thinks Congress has a case. One article in particular accuses Johnson of corruptly using his veto power, basically trying to criminalize the fact that Johnson vetoed some of Congress's bills, which is a right guaranteed to him through the Constitution. That first attempt at impeachment dies as Congress fails to support those articles. But the issue of Stanton's removal in violation of the Tenure of Office Act remains. In 1868, a military subcommittee calls for the president to reinstate Stanton into his position as Secretary of War. At this point, Grant is starting to get nervous. According to that Tenure of Office Act, anyone who accepts a job illegitimately faces 5 years in prison and a $10,000 fine. Grant doesn't outright resign, but he talks to Johnson and implies that he will leave the post if Congress asks him to, and that's exactly what happens. Congress votes to reinstate Stanton, and Grant leaves the post and returns to his position as General-in-Chief of the U.S. Army. Johnson is furious, and as Stanton is moving back into his office, Johnson is loudly complaining to his cabinet that Grant let him down and failed to stand up for himself. Rather than accept Stanton, he begins to search for Grant's replacement and finds it in Lorenzo Thomas. Thomas was a general throughout the Civil War who occasionally clashed with Stanton and believed that Stanton never really allowed him the career he deserved. Johnson flat out fired Stanton and announced that Thomas would be taking his job and actually sent Thomas to deliver the news personally. Stanton did not vacate his office. Instead, he posted guards outside the War Department and waited for his friends in Congress to draft articles of impeachment. Oh, and in the meantime, he had Thomas arrested and taken to the Capitol prison. Now, those who initially wanted to impeach Andrew Johnson had exactly what they wanted, outright proof that the president had violated the law. While Stanton stayed in his office, the Congress voted that, in fact, Stanton was covered by the Tenure of Office Act and by a vote of 128 to 47 votes to impeach Andrew Johnson. According to the Constitution, the impeachment process is begun in the House of Representatives and then moves to the Senate for the trial. The Chief Justice of the Supreme Court acts as judge, and a conviction requires a two-thirds vote by the Senate. A conviction would mean that the president was removed from office. Any further criminal prosecution would have to take place after that. There are 11 articles of impeachment, or basically charges, and they have to do with Stanton being removed from office improperly. Johnson, of course, is permitted to have lawyers and to mount a defense, and the primary basis for that defense is that the Tenure of Office Act does not apply to the Secretary of War. The prosecution argues that Johnson violated the act by removing Stanton from office and replacing him with another person without congressional approval. And there's a good point there. Even if the act didn't apply to the Secretary of War's removal, there had to be congressional approval of Stanton's replacement. As the proceedings drag on, Johnson is quiet, and that gives everybody a little time to think. Johnson does not have a vice president, so the next person in line is Ben Wade, president pro tempore of the Senate. The majority party began to feel that maybe replacing Johnson with Wade would kind of disaffect the population and ruin their chances of retaining power in the next set of elections. On May 16, 1868, the trial had completed and the Senate voted. 19 against the conviction, 35 in favor. To make a two-thirds majority, they needed 36. In just a few months, Ulysses S. Grant would be nominated by his party for President of the United States, and Andrew Johnson would be passed over by his own party in favor of a different candidate. Reconstruction would go on with the former Confederate states being treated like territories that needed to earn the privilege of rejoining the United States. And with that, I will remind you that Moving Through Georgia is, as I always say, a history podcast mostly focusing on Northeast Georgia. I find this stuff fascinating. If you do too, I'd love to hear from you. Movingthroughgeorgia@gmail.com. I'm really excited to tell you that I have two live shows coming up. The first one is Saturday, April 6th. That's at BSG Cafe in Cornelia. That's a new place next to Big Daddy's. Next, on April 13th, at Sweet Southern Creations on Washington Street in Clarksville. It's more or less across from the theater. Both will start at 3 o'clock. They'll last about an hour. No admission, of course, and both will lean a little more heavily on true crime than I've done in other live shows. If you've done a Haunted Habersham ghost tour with me, this is all new material. I'm not reusing any material from the ghost tours. And I'm really excited to get out and meet some people who are listening to the podcast. So if you can make it on April 6th or April 13th, I'd really love to see you there. And we will return to local history next week. I have a really good story about a bank robbery in Columbus. I hope you like it. From an adept pretty gal to Georgia, that's all.